Welcome back to the Firefighter Craftsmanship Podcast, where we navigate and guide you through the psychology of high performance, expand your mindset, and strengthen your resilience. And today, very excited to welcome Christian Macklin, who's the Health and Well-Being Officer with South Metro Fire Department, which is in Colorado, south of the Denver metro area. Welcome to the show, Christian.
No, thank you for having me.
Very excited to talk to you. You guys are, we talked off camera briefly and you called yourself a unicorn based on your job title, but South Metro is kind of a unicorn based on what you have all done in relation to human performance optimization. And so we're going to dive into that, which I know the audience of Firefighter Craftsmanship is going to be super excited about. And I know that you're going to be able to give them some great tangible resources that, and some of them are going to be free, and then some other maybe excitement and encouragement if it isn't free, on how we can maybe drive some positive change from the lower levels of our organization and really impact people long term. And I think that that's a very consistent question that we get here at Firefighter Craftsmanship is, you know, how can I expand this? How can I teach this stuff? How can I really get my department to kind of buy into actual wellness, not just one little teeny part or piece of overall wellness? So I'm super excited to talk with you today.
Yeah, awesome.
So kind of give us a brief overview. You know, South Metro is a pretty big department now here in the state of Colorado, the great state of snowy Colorado right now. But you guys had a few unfortunate circumstances which really drove some positive organizational change. Can you speak to what happened there?
Yeah, if we go back to 2012, I was on the union's executive board at the time. We had a traditional occupational medicine program, traditional annual physical process, and we were running an incumbent physical ability test. We were running that physical ability test a little bit like an assembly line, like we sort of do in the fire service, right? Like check the box, we're trying to get everybody through in a timely manner. And we weren't paying attention to ambient air temperature, call volume, sleep, all those kind of things. So we were running this IPAT, like I said, trying to get as many men and women through as we could in a short period of time. And what was happening concurrently was, you know, this just, we were all in the same all circumstances is, you know, we were lingering in a workers' compensation system. And then at the same time, we were doing stress 12 lead EKGs, right, on a threat. And we had some false positives. So all this stuff, we sort of had a perfect storm. So we had, you know, the dissatisfaction with OCMED and workers' compensation. And then we had these medical emergencies in our IPAT. You know, so we had an MI, we had a hypertension crisis, but our most significant was that cardiac arrest, right? We had a 42-year-old firefighter engineer who had been up the night before, did his morning workout, warmer day, goes back to the firehouse after performing his IPAT and succumbs to cardiac arrest. And fortunately, we're blessed that, you know, and I can share his name, Nick Ravina. We tell his story quite a bit. Nick was resuscitated, but this is a gentleman that was in and out of cardiac arrest for 2 hours, defibrillated 12 times, went to the cath lab in arrest, right, which is really unique. But ultimately, he had a large lesion in his LAD, but it was really that hypercoagulative state, right, of being dehydrated, high ambient, you know, core body temperature. It's really just perfect storm of circumstances. And that's really where we talk a lot about the relationship between labor and management. And we just went to the chief and ops chief and said, hey, we don't want to take this test anymore. But we're willing to jump back in the pool if we could have a more robust health and wellness program.
Yeah, an interesting point there for sure to really, really highlight and benchmark is you're not trying to get out of physical fitness testing. It's, hey, can we do physical fitness testing that's relevant and also maybe doesn't compromise the individual based on other factors like dehydration, sleep deprivation, what day
Correct.
Shift they're on, that sort of stuff. And how was that
right.
Received?
Well, actually, right, like I said, our skin in the game as firefighters is that physical test, right? But what we got with that was this robust program. So we were able to tick both boxes at the same time, right? Chief was satisfied that we promised, right? You know, the relationship and having trust is, hey, we promise we will move back towards a test. You want a physical ability test? We'll move back to that, but give us the time and space to grow a program, to be curious and see what else is out there, to use different types of technology and, change from what we've always, how we've always done it. And so, received well at this, at the labor e-board and the staff, but just like right? In the firehouse, it's different. And at the union meetings, it's different. And there was a whole lot of struggle, right? In comprehending this change, and why are we doing, why am I wearing a mask on a treadmill for a test when I swing an axe and wear PPE on the fire ground? And so there was a lot of discomfort, right? And but we grew out of that, right? We learned and refined. And so, but it took some time. But really the win, and I don't want to jump ahead too far, but really the win was when men and women, in 2014, when they started to receive really good care around their workers' compensation injuries. That's when the rubber hit the road, right? And then we introduced the test and the rubber, and then the test was mandatory by 2016. So we all these really good things were happening from, from hiring that first employee to 2014. And so people were just feeling better and trusting that the organization was putting men and women first, right? Above some of the other things that I think that we made up maybe in the story in our minds was, hey, the agency doesn't care about us, right? But in reality, we ascend to positions to do better for our men and women.
Yeah, indeed. I agree. All great positive stuff. And so that event happened in 2012, is that correct?
Yeah, so the suspending the IPAT and deciding to rebrand our occupational medicine programs was 2012. We had a group of men and our HR director that just did what most of us do. We started to look around in the industry and see who else was doing what. We went to Phoenix, Orange County, California, Seattle, lots of phone calls, lots of emailing, and really came back and we liked the foundation that Phoenix Fire had around VO2 standards and that higher level of medical surveillance. We dabbled a little bit with the WFI, but we didn't think the WFI was really meeting the industry, wasn't meeting the job requirements of the industry, like it should. And so we started with that. We started with that Phoenix foundation. And then we went to work on writing the outline of the program and trying to hire the very first employee.
Fantastic. And you did all that as a line firefighter, is that correct?
Yes. And so, yeah, a union e-board member, like I said, there were a lot of partners that went out and took these trips and we all, as a group, we got it. We collected this information. In 2013, I came offline in a modified duty position. They asked one of us on the e-board. Now, don't get me wrong. I love the program. I care deeply about the men and women that serve. And that's always been my, I've led with that, like put the men and women that serve first, right? And then we take better care of our communities. And so I've always joked that, well, I tore my ACL. So we all said no, and then I tore my ACL and I said yes. But in reality, I would have done it, right? Because I care deeply about it. But yeah, I tore my ACL in 2013, and my modified duty assignment was creating this program and determining who to hire first.
Fantastic. Yeah. And I think a really, really important thing to point out is, this event happened in 2012. The union was involved. It was a cohesive, hey, we got to figure out what happened first. And then how do we
Right.
proceed from here in a healthy sense, not just eliminating, from a department standpoint, from an HR standpoint, from an occ health standpoint, workers' comp, union standpoint, and the line firefighters. Like all of the stakeholders were involved in that. And then eventually, 4 years later, it was finally a requirement, right? So it wasn't like an overnight
Right.
thing, And for me, who's probably the most impatient person on the planet, I want it to happen yesterday. You have to understand, like, to do things right, sometimes it takes a long time from a personal satisfaction and probably an ego standpoint, like, hey, I just want to get this done. I can see the answer. But also from a department standpoint to say, hey, we are going to commit monies. Right. Luckily, Macklin tore his ACL and we're going to put him in this position.
Right, 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 right.
But also, we commit money that now, 11 years later, Macklin is still in that position. But initially, it was probably kind of slow going and hard to really justify maybe some of those expenses from a department standpoint on places. That's the big thing that we hear a lot is like, well, how are we supposed to afford this?
I think one of the things too that I always try to make sure people hear is that we started with very little. So we repurposed a staff FTE, staff position FTE. And I don't even really remember what it was, but it might have been a division assistant, a position like that. So it was a dedicated staff position that we were able to reframe into a wellness position. We still didn't know what we were gonna, what modality credential we were gonna hire. And then we went to work like looking for extra money, right? And so I wrote a really simple AFG, right, FEMA grant. And so I got $42,000. So we started with $42,000 from FEMA, AFG FEMA. We had this repurposed staff FTE, and we had 500 square feet that were just evacuated in our basement that our former, like, we used to have a one person IT team, right? And that's the room he worked in. And so we really just repurposed space, reframed an FTE, and we started with this 42K budget. And really what we did with that budget too is, like I said, we weren't sure about where the what the WFI could do with us from a fitness for duty perspective, but we budgeted for that equipment, and then we budgeted for some consulting, right? And but that's really where we started. So we didn't start, what we have today. Yeah, we didn't start with that, right? We started very simple and slow.
You started like, I'm a big fan of the movie Office Space. So you were basically like
Yeah.
Milton who got slammed into the
Yeah.
basement and
Right.
somebody stole your
Right.
stapler,
Ex
right?
that's exactly. Yeah, exactly. And in fact, I'll tell you this funny anecdote is on date, well, we can back like, yeah, we hired, I'll just, I mean, it's up to you, like, I'll just jump to this, right? Like, I didn't know who to hire. And so I looked at, like I said, I'm a novice. I'm a firefighter, but I care deeply. I had some disruption from responding to Columbine High School that led me to lean into the behavioral health and well-being in peer support space. And I was always very active physically, right? Skiing, snowboarding, playing soccer. And then I got sucked into the CrossFit phase for probably 10 years here in the department. But I was always very active and curious, and but I didn't know a lot about like the teams outside of like, or I've had a couple ACLs, Achilles tendon rupture. I understand orthopedic medicine and that environment, but I didn't know like the other things very well, performance and those moving parts. And so I looked at exercise physiologists, athletic trainers, physical therapists, strength coaches, really where to hire. And I ultimately, we interviewed these three or four different modalities out of the, we got about We got we didn't get a lot of, people like, what is this fire department doing? So we didn't get a lot of applications. We got like 45 applications for this position. And then we narrowed it down to 12 that we interviewed, and I ended up choosing an athletic trainer from the Denver Broncos. So he was the first assistant over there. And really, because what he was able to articulate to me was the ability to care for a large population, right, of industrial athletes, right? And look at them, all facets of caring for them, not just, tearing a knee, but also behavioral health and how we can integrate all of these things. So this gentleman really had the mind, and came in with an open heart and mind to integrate into the fire service really well.
I love it. I'm a huge fan of like learning from other industries. I'm a big, I like to learn a lot from entrepreneurs and small business owners because I think like for us that are operating on engine and truck companies, especially as an officer, you have a small team of people, right? 3 to 4 people that you're
Right.
working with,
Right.
and you're kind of like a small business owner, right? Like really, you can do whatever
Right.
you want. I mean, you might get fired
Right.
for it, but you can essentially do whatever
Right.
you want. But you
Right.
deliver great customer service. You make sure that we have ditch banks painted, that you uphold the organizational values, like all those sorts of things. So I'm a big fan of like learning from outside organizations, especially leadership stuff is
Right.
not within emergency services. Let's look at other industries and also maybe not even military. Like how
Right.
are small cohesive teams doing things really, really well? And then you plug that into the greater thing. So I think it's really cool that you said, hey, I don't really know where to start, but let's kind of throw this thing out there. We got to start somewhere. And then you're lucky that you guys can almost see the Denver Broncos facility from your training center, your South training center, right? And you had that amazing resource right there. And then this dude was really willing to help you out. And he's used to performing with really, really high performing athletes. But he's also very comfortable within the space of like athletes in the NFL get hurt. And they have a really short amount of time. So they're trying to optimize their thing. So he probably was like, hey, this is a cool new experience where I'm trying to optimize athletes that are going to be here for 25 to 30 years potentially versus somebody who might be here for three. So that's kind of a probably a unique thing there too. So I think it's a really important again to point out that in emergency services, we don't have to have all the answers. Like, yes, on 911 calls, that's kind of our job. We try to figure out the answers. But when we're trying to create new programs and things that are in an effort for like the well-being of our members, it's okay if you don't know. And so, like Christian here, who's likes to hurt himself and has a lot of doctor's appointments, and is also into fitness, and has some nasty calls under his belt, right? You mentioned Columbine High School, a terrible call for sure. It doesn't mean that you have to have all the answers, but you just got to kind of start somewhere, and then you create, the who, not how. Like, how do we get the who's on the right seats on the right bus? And then let them kind of run and teach us, and then let us kind of teach them, and then let's see kind of where this thing goes. And 11 years later, it's that model sure worked for you guys.
Yeah, I think, and like you said, I think being the, I would say this, right, more than anything is the most important thing is to be curious, right? As we like one, we like we all we like you, I can feel that from you, Kevin. Like we lead with our hearts. We're we want to take care of the men and women well. We want to do really well with our at our jobs, but sometimes we get stuck in our lanes in the fire service. And so by being curious, like you said, not knowing who to hire was actually a huge benefit to us. But then once Vince was here, and again, leveraging relationships, right? And so the orthopedic surgeon at the Denver Broncos, Dr. Martin Boblick, was also my orthopedic surgeon, right? So I knew him before we hired Vince. And so we had this relationship with Dr. Boblick, who actually put his name, like he said, you leverage relationships to get started simply without a lot of funding. Dr. Boblick put his name on the line. He signed the documentation to be our level two accredited physician, to help us open the doors, right? Like that relationship building, right? And trust in with a provider, that didn't cost us anything, right? That didn't cost us money. That was time and energy and building a relationship with him that I had as the patient and that Vince had as a professional. And then from there, what we started to do is, we started attending corporate health and wellness conferences, corporate on-site clinic conferences, and so we started to look at this other community out there that's doing this in a corporate model, right? Because the beautiful thing that you find there is that these are for profit companies, right? We're so used to being public, government entities that we look at budget differently, right? We don't always we're not looking at a profit line, and so I think sometimes we are willing to spend a little bit more money on something not as efficient, right? Because we're in public safety, where businesses are they're humming machines that they don't want waste, and so if they're doing this, well, how are they doing it? Businesses that are doing this aren't doing it to make money or. But if they can take better care of their employees while being more efficient, while saving money, right? So we really spend a lot of time looking at what these other companies do, right? And there's lots of organizations out there. And the other thing that I think that I learned is, if you're curious and you start reaching out and attending these conferences, you see that you don't have to recreate the wheel, right? There's already somebody, doing something that you can adopt, and we can translate it into our language in the fire service, right? We can lay, we can take our, we can take our dictionary, right? And thesaurus, and lay it over, right? The firefighter's dictionary, and we can lay it over these other things so that we understand it better. But that's how we got where we got was, and then the other thing is the nuts and bolts of it too, right, Kevin, is I didn't know a thing about workers' compensation administration. But I started drinking from a fire hose in 2012, right? I understood how we were insured, benefit side, workers' compensation side. And then I had to go understand what a third-party administrator was. I had to know, are you self-insured or are you fully insured? And I had to go meet these people and understand how it really works. And then I also had to understand what kind of, this is another way of understanding that it doesn't cost a lot of money to do some of this programming is You just have to understand how it works because you can, as an organization, implement tactics that help expedite your men and women to care and reduce costs and be a little more efficient. And that's really just, again, goes back to relationship building with the risk manager, with the insurance company, with the mayor, with the, you know, and those are things that but that's just what I did for 2 years, was I learned and understood the workers' compensation and program and how we were insured.
Yeah, it was really your 2 years of research, right? I mean, if we look at like a peer-reviewed research study and we might get a lot of value from whatever the results of that thing were, we kind of forget that that thing might have taken like 5 years worth of work before they cranked out the data that we can actually use as the meat. So let's take the WFI, for example. That wasn't an overnight thing. It's an
Correct.
ever-evolving thing. And you know, there's been a more recent addition than what you guys initially were working off of. But that there's an example of something that now, like, we have a good thing that's endorsed by the unions, and then says, hey, maybe this is a baseline, and that baseline might be way, way above what our fire department is already doing. But hey, here's a good framework that we can start to build off of. We just forget that that thing has been in development for 15 years, you know? And so I think that that, again, like, because that's the big thing. It's an easy thing for departments and organizations to say, well, we don't have the money for that. But or I got to see results really, really quickly so I can, you know, tell the stakeholders. And it's like, well, there has to be like an allowance of a research and a learning phase in there if we're going to do this thing right. Which, why would we do it if we're not going to do it right?
And really that curiosity, of looking over the fence, looking what other industries doing, you know, just lead you to more and better, right? And so my initial going to some of those conferences, I understood and learned about NIOSH's Total Worker Health Program, right? And so again, that's just a great blueprint. It's already there. We don't have to recreate the wheel. You can take that NIOSH Total Worker Health Program and you can layer in what you already have available, and then you can see maybe where you have gaps and you can build it. That's a nice, it's a well-established document that's nice to show a city council or a board of directors. Like, look, here's this thing that's already built, and can we put some things in it? And then there's also an organization called the National, I think I always get their acronym wrong, but it's the National On-Site Workers On-Site Program. So it's clinics that are on-site, right? It's the National Association of Worksite On-Site Clinics. So it's like, you know, but it's a great organization. So all of these Fortune 500 companies that have on-site programs belong to this. Some school districts belong to it. But it's the only organization I'm aware of that both public government entities and private are together talking about how can we do this more efficiently and better. And so again, it's a great place to go and listen and learn and say, well, wait a minute, because so many of these are profit or budget driven. They learn some hard lessons, but they do good taking care of larger populations and doing it differently. And then that same kind of idea led us down to look at what the military is doing, right? And so, you know, we're blessed here in Colorado to, you know, down in the Colorado Springs, Fort Carson, and Fort Carson houses this, you know, elite group of Green Berets, the 10th group, which is a special forces unit of elite Green Beret soldiers. And so they have a really robust program down there called THOR, where they're caring for these soldiers, and they're caring for them physically, right? So with their strength and conditioning, their medical, so on and so forth, their behavioral health, right? So in clinical psychology, and then next they're over to the cognitive performance, right? So that's that sports performance psychologist that we're used to in athletics, that same basic training, but they're designed for high risk occupations, right? For the elite. And so we went down to see what they were doing and sort of blown away with, you know, how they care for their soldiers. And that's really where we made this connection to that other modality, you know. And again, in my simple firefighter brain, I remember asking, you know, the gentleman running this program, and I like to share this anecdote of like what he was really doing down there. So that he's preparing the soldier that gets, you know, maybe 2 or 3 seconds on a target that he's trained on for a year to pull his trigger or not pull his trigger, you know, in a tenth of a second quicker or slower when he has that 1 second on target after training for 10 years, or sorry, for a year. And I ask him, hey, can you help us reduce injuries on the fire ground, right? It's sort of like he just looked at me like, well, yeah. Well, of course, his answer was, yeah, I think we can do that. But and you see what I'm saying is like, I think if we start to more thoughtfully deploy these other resources into our regular reoccurring training and academy training, we can be better firefighters, right? And we can, and I know that people, we throw resiliency and grit and all these things around, but I really do think that teaching men and women to be better prepared on their worst day, right? So we're raising the bar with physical ability and strength conditioning, right? Their capacity for physical work. And then we're also expanding their ability to perform at their best on their worst day. And by adding elements of training that we normally haven't added, right? Like putting them in situations and maybe they'll never be in, but so that they're able to compensate and focus and go through their mental Rolodex of what they can do in this moment, right? And we weren't doing that, right? I don't think we've been doing that as an industry. And I really think that's like the next big lift for the industry is that's because that, and I don't mean this to like sound, I don't want to demean like physical health, right? But physical health is easy. Creating a program of strength conditioning and physical rehab is the easiest thing to do because it's easy to understand, it's easy to implement, and it's easier to manage. This other modality is new to us, right? And we don't understand it very well. And how can this help us be better firefighters? Why do I need, someone helping prepping me through the maze or bailout training or so on and so forth, really make me a better firefighter? I think that's the next big step or evolution in a program like ours.
Yeah, you make some great points. And, there's so many resources around physical conditioning, and it's sexy and it's really easy to measure, right? I can measure really, really simply, did your bench press go up? Did your VO2 max go up? Right? Did your BMI go down? Your body fat percentage is super easy for us to measure. When we talk about resiliency training and mental performance under stress, we can measure those things, but it's not as clear of a framework, And so, like, that's where, going and talking to the 10th Mountain Group, how are you doing this? You have this massive Thor program, so we have a cool framework that we can take and use and take the parts and pieces that we think are appropriate to emergency services. But ultimately, like, how are you doing this? And again, I'll come back to it. How are you justifying the cost? Because the federal government is absolutely looking at, like, hey, we want to make sure that we're being somewhat fiscally responsible. Those things are always under budget constraints and things like that. And I think that that's a really important thing. And I would 100% agree with you. The fire service specifically has completely ignored the mental component of this game. And now we have a great conversation that's happening around mental health, but it's all reactionary. Which is fantastic. We need to have these conversations. We need to have clinical psychologists and clinicians and mental health therapists and peer support groups and talk about PTSD and those conversations. And you and I both know, like, the firehouse kitchen table now, within the last 5 years, they're happening all the time, which is really, really cool. And they should be. But we're not really talking about, well, how do I get people ready before they need it? Right. And so that's kind of our big thing here at Firefighter Craftsmanship is pre-resilience training. How do we make you resilient and give you systems and tools and processes during your everyday, life that when the curtain opens and it's time to do the thing, like, you are completely ready, or you're at least set up for success to have post-traumatic growth and, like, all of those sorts of things. And so that's not also the only answer, right? It's just another part and piece to that, but it's really, really cool to see an organization that said, okay, we got the strength and conditioning stuff. We got the athletic trainer from the Broncos. We got an orthopedic surgeon here. We're working through workers' comp and blah, 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 blah. What's the next thing, and who's doing that? And that's really, really cool. And it's really, really important to just point out, Christian and the team down there at South Metro has just used the resources that were within an hour of themselves. And so a lot of us work and live in areas where there are major universities within at least 3 or 4 hours. And those universities have some pretty amazing folks that are doing some pretty cool stuff, So, like, I live up here in Northern Colorado. We have Colorado State University in Fort Collins. We have CU Boulder, which is 45 minutes away. Both of those things are massive resources. And then we have a lot of professional sports in the Denver metro area that we can also tap into those people on off days, you know, or off season. So again, just use the resources that you have, or, you know, we got to talk to Jesse Clark up there in Boise, you know, and he's doing some great stuff. And then now there's a clinic that's specifically for first responders up there that's been created by an MD that was like, hey, wait a minute, this is a population that needs help. I'm a private business owner and I enjoy that population. Let's combine those things. And then Jesse, you know, has gotten to do some really cool stuff and has connected with you and I and JD Miller up in Canada. And like, man, it's a really small community and we're all really willing to help along the way. So just rest assured, all of you out there that are listening, like it is attainable. There are people that are there to help you, even when you're super pissed and frustrated and you don't know where to go next. There are people out there that are willing to help.
Jesse, those guys are crushing it in Boise, right? They're moving. He's motivated. He's being vulnerable by asking hard questions and pushing, right? And that's I would say that a couple of things that I think that you said it at the beginning about really bottom up or leading up. And I think that, again, I'll speak, you know, I was we were at the Science to the Station conference last year in Tucson, and there was a young captain out of San Diego that was asking a lot of questions, good questions in our session. And but he'd been doing a lot of hard work, and he was really what he was trying to figure out was like, hey, who do we hire? Who do we hire to lead our program? And I said, you. I said, go back to your chief, go back to your deputy chief and say, you're the guy. You're here at the conference by yourself. You just told me like you've done all this work at the firehouse level. You're the guy that's curious. Like you don't have to have these credentials. You don't have to have this background. You have to care. Like you said, you have to give a shit about the men and women. You have to want to do better. And so often I think we forget that those men and women are in our midst. They're in our firehouse right now. They're sitting on a truck or a medic unit right now, and they care deeply. We don't have to, we don't, we, you know, we don't always have to go outside. There's somebody that cares so much that's as curious as you are, that I am, that can lead these programs, right? And I think that's part of us changing. That's a big paradigm shift, right, for us. And which is, but it's really cool. And like it sort of hit him in that moment of like, hey, you're right. And I'm like, you know, like, hey, go back and you're the guy. You don't you, you now you Or you lead the program, right? You're the cultural competent firefighter, right? You know what it takes to do the job, and you can go interview these people, and you can ask them how this modality could help us, and so on and so forth, right? I think that that's what a lot of guys don't know, that or you know, guys and gals don't know in our departments, is that we have that ability, right? We don't, you know, because I got 33 years today, right? This year, not to this exact day, but this year I'm 33 years, right? And 26 online. And so we have a lot of experience, right? Like we've run those calls, and so it's okay to speak up and say, oh, I think we can do this, right? And but I just want to encourage people that way. Like I love that you said it that way, because I think that's always the secret sauce to me, is the men and women that do the job, network, communicate, you know, and can advocate better than anybody else can.
Absolutely. Yeah. What would you say the lowest hanging fruit is to justify financial? Because again, this is the thing that I hear all the time is like, oh, well, we just can't afford it. We can't afford it. I mean, would it be to start in that workers' comp lane? Because if we can keep people at work or get them back to work faster, we actually make the department money, right? You are a revenue generator. If you get somebody back 2 months faster,
You
you've saved
yeah
overtime.
so yeah so let's look at the beginning of an injury, right? And so in a traditional occupational medicine model, you know, a lot of those models, like the model we had previously, it was you get injured, they want you to go to physical therapy first before they order an image, right? And so a lot of that was, you know, 4 to 6, 6 to 8 weeks of conservative care before they would pay for it. Let's be honest, you can get an MRI for as cheap as $350. So what are we saving, right? We just incurred, like, we and I know the math is better today, but we always used to, as we'd say, $1,000 a day. Every day a firefighter's not at shift, on their shift day, it costs us $1,000. I'm pretty sure it's more than that today, right? It's 2024. But so imagine, like, so right away, by just a process of saying, and that's what we did, I said, well, why do we have to wait for the MRI? And that was like understanding the industry and talking to not just the third party administrator and insurance company, but the actual adjuster and the manager right? And saying, well, why? Why do you have to send this? So I had to learn all these things. Why do I have to send this to utilization review? Why does this other thing have to go to another physician peer review? Like, why are we? And understanding that, well, at the end of the day, it's your money. Like, you find out what your deductible is, right? As an agency, it's your money. So, you know, so that's what we said. We said, well, I want all of our firefighters to get an MRI the day they get hurt. We want to know the answer. Do you need surgery? And so by doing that and creating this pre-authorization model, which is just an administrative model, is we eliminated that 6 to 8 weeks of lost time right away. So in 2014, that's what we did. That was when the first big bite we took was no more going to PT first. They get injured, they see a physician, they get an image ordered. We know if they need surgery or not, right? And so if they need surgery, then we expedite their route to the OR. So we've eliminated that 6 to 8 weeks of lost time. That was the first thing we tackled. And that was just an administrative lift. That didn't cost us a dime to do that. We just had to understand the system, right? And then we had to ask those kind of questions. Because I remember asking those questions and people would look at you like, what do you mean? Well, why do we have to do it that way? Well, you don't. Well, then let's not, right? But nobody asks. We just sort of take it as it is. Like, well, they're the insurance company. They decide. Well, what I've learned is that that's not always true, right? We have to push and ask questions. And so that's, like you said, that is a great starting point, is because that's simple, right? That's just simple. And you don't even have to have a program to do that. You can go talk to, you know, the chief can talk to the risk manager or the mayor and say, hey, I got a way to save money. We're going to spend $300 to $500 on an MRI when a firefighter gets hurt, instead of send them to 6 to 8 weeks of PT, and then we'll know if they need surgery, right? That's just a great example of something that's really simple, that doesn't cost money. And then the other thing that I think philosophically you have to get governance on board, you know, that we talk about it all the time. You know, we'll go spend 1.5, 1.75 on a tower, or we'll go spend $1 million on an engine, right? But our men and women are the primary asset. They're the most valuable part of the organization. And so it's okay to spend a little bit more on them. And so really what I say is, like, I think the like what I've always conveyed to our board and our leadership is, let's make what we spend more valuable. We're going to spend it anyways, right? We're going to spend those work comp dollars. We're going to have that lost time. But if you can make that every dollar more valuable, right, is a model too. It doesn't have to, like, hey, we're going to save money, we're going to put money in the bank, we're going to bill for services. Hey, if we have a $2 million budget, well, what if we start hiring staff in-house that's culturally competent to do PT in-house, right? And you don't have to have the whole, but it's a great starting point. I think it's I'm trying to think what Costa Mesa County, California. And they're like a special district similar to South Metro. And they were like in merged smaller departments. Well, they hired two physical therapists, and that's what they're doing right now. They're going slow. They got two PTs. And they're just like, well, that's what we did. It's crawl, walk, run, right? And so that's like you said, that physical work comp is a really great way to start. And there's lots of different ways to navigate it, right?
Fantastic stuff. And again, just kind of start and then track your progress, right? And then educate, lead up the chain of command, or lead across the chain of command if you're a chief officer. And then you at some point, everybody's got to lead up, because you have the city council or the mayor or the city manager or board of directors or whatever, that you have to educate and say, hey, here's why this is costing so much money, and here is the vision. Here's the vision. Here's the vision. And then boom, at some point, maybe 2, 3 years, we got a lot of great data that shows that this thing not only paid for itself, but it actually made our workforce healthier, which is not a monetary value, but it is a monetary value, because your sick time is going to go down and your worker comp is going to go down, and on and on and on, and your recruitment and retention is going to go up, right? And so there's a lot of different angles that you can just be a little bit creative, and you got to think a little bit more businessy of how would we sell this, right? Like you mentioned, if we were private industry, right, we want to run as lean as possible, because the goal is to have profit. And so we're in the government, right? We kind of get penalized if we have leftover money. Next year we might not get it, which is insane, right? So but that is what it is. That's the system that we have to deal with. But I think workers' comp is probably an easy low-hanging fruit. And like Christian said again, is step one, educate yourself. And kind of don't believe the hype, right? I'll say it out loud. Like, don't believe the hype. And remember that ultimately, as the fire department or the EMS or police or whatever, you are their customer. You get to choose your workers' comp provider. You are their customer, and you can say, wait a minute, what does my money get me? How does this work? Like, not just because it's convenient and easy for them. What's the actual rules of the game? And then, do we want to change the rules and we're going to pay out of pocket for a private MRI company initially, 300, 400, 500 bucks, and save, right? In that example, if they're off for 6 weeks, let's say, that might be $18,000 if they're working three shifts a week, right? And so
Right.
you're saving a lot of money by spending 300 bucks.
And the other part of relationship building. So again, like I illustrated, the relationship with Dr. Martin Boblich. Like, so he had, I already knew him, right? He had repaired my Achilles tendon when I ruptured it, and before, in 2012. And so we when we when I hired Vince, that was our the first 2 days we did two things. The first day we went to Mile High Stadium and we raided the visiting team locker room for treatment tables, so on and so forth, that we borrowed for a period of time until our equipment came to town, right? Which was awesome, right? And then day two, we went over to see Dr. Boblich at Stedman Hawkins, and we said, hey, what we asked him was, can you start getting our firefighters squeezed in between your athletes and the general population? Right. And you can imagine a unanimous yes. And then that followed quickly with he brought all the front office staff from the clinic in, right? So they understood, like, when we call, this is right the path. And then he brought the surgeons in, right? So in that same week, we saw the front office staff, we saw all the other surgeons in the building, and they all agreed to this philosophically that they would try to accommodate these firefighters and sandwich us in. So again, that's free. That's just relationship building, right? And that's what's happened in Boise, right? That's relationship building with Jesse and the physician building this clinic, this idea, right? Just like, hey, we could do better. And on their end, they're still gonna, it's still profitable for the surgeons, right? It's still profitable for the physician in Boise. But all you're doing is you're just creating this pathway that's a little bit better. But then again, doesn't cost money. It's just relationship building. And most of they live in our communities anyways, right? We're serving these group of physicians and providers, and so they appreciate what we do, and so they're willing to give us that little bit of leverage over, someone that isn't losing time or not getting paid when they're not at work. And so that was just a great example again of something else that doesn't cost money, is just, t-shirts and hats and challenge coins go a long way sometimes, right? I don't think we appreciate that.
Yeah, and the fire service, specifically has worked really hard to build an amazing reputation in the United States over a long period of time. And so it's up to us to uphold that thing. But we can also use that a little bit to the advantage if we're trying to expand wellness within our department and just say, hey, I'm going to bring you people that actually want to be back at work. It's not a complaining group by any means, right? Like they're
Right.
complaining because they
Yep.
can't go ride the
Yes.
rig. And for the most part, it's a relatively healthy population of people. So they're going to be good patients. You're going to have good success. It's
Yeah.
not going to be as much work as a physician on dealing with this person. And they're going to probably do a little bit more than they should during like physical rehab. But they're probably going to get healthier quicker. So like all of those things as an MD, that's a pretty fun patient for them to have, is somebody that's relatively educated, that they like what they do, they want to get back to work, they're not trying to get out of going to work, and they come in with a baseline level of health. Heck yeah, I want to operate on that person versus maybe somebody else that we run 911 calls on three or four times in one
Right.
shift, right? And so
Right.
let's just call it like it is. So yeah, capitalizing on those things, but also like painting the vision for them and saying, hey, not only does this benefit you financially, now you have a really cool thing with the fire department that serves your family, and helping grow those people because you want them to be healthy, happy, and strong, right? And so like that's a win-win. And I think it's really, really cool to say they're the ones that know how scheduling work and how insurance works and all of that sort of stuff. So now you just kick the ball back to them and you say, hey, please teach me on how can we actually make your life easier and also get better care quicker.
Yeah. And I think that, like, all of our everyone in your agency has an opportunity to play a role in these programs, right? Too, because another program that we initiated last year was this coronary artery CT scan program, right? And so we did a little pilot last year, I'm going to use some general math. I don't remember the exact numbers, but basically we sent about 28 firefighters to get a coronary artery CT, contrast CT, and then we had artificial intelligence applied that read the CT rapidly, that they determined the amount of plaque, hot plaque that would rupture, and calcified plaque in their heart quickly. But really where this program came from, it wasn't any one person sitting in like, hey, let's do this thing. It came from two men that needed healthcare, and they went and had these procedures done, and they saw it, and they were curious and said, hey, can we bring this back? And so one was our deputy chief of operations and one was our fire chief. And they're like, hey, I just saw this really cool technology. And so over the course of about 18 months, we talk about these things. And then, we have an in-house physician now. And so now we actually have a team where we can model what this could look like in an occupational physical, a screening tool. So when we talk, again, we go back to governance and talk about funding and saving money. Now, this is an expensive bite on the front end, right? But we all know that, like, prevention is, I think in our industry, prevention is more important, right? An athlete can take a, an ACL on the 1 yard line about to go into the end zone, right? But that happens to us on the fire ground. We know that there's other lives at risk, right? We know that potentially, that ripple can hurt and injure citizens and other firefighters. And so we don't want those things to happen on game day, right? So certainly we don't want an MI to happen on the fire ground. And so what we found is we have a higher rate of plaque and cardiac disease than the general population going through these CTs. And so let's fast forward into 2024. We were able to accomplish to get about 300 of these CTs done, right? And we still have higher rates of disease than the general population. But let me tell you a couple of the wins, right? We had a last year in our pilot, we're really careful not to call it a study yet, right? At our pilot last year, we had a gentleman that was 51 years old that thought he had long COVID. And he had heard that, one of his friends that was on modified duty got asked to be a part of this pilot. And he's like, hey, he just raised his hand and said, hey, I'd like to do this. He thought he had long COVID. His workouts weren't as great. He was saying a couple stories in his PPE. He felt a little bit more winded than normal. And then he did what most of us don't do. He went to the doctor on his own. He's like, hey, I don't think something's right. They did an EKG. They did some other things. He saw a pulmonologist. They're like, we just think you might have long COVID. So he raises his hand. We put him in the pilot. He has an 80% occlusion of his LAD. And then when the physician actually goes in to place the stent, she determines that he has a 95% occlusion of his LAD. So he would have been at that Widowmaker MI cardiac arrest at 51. And he wants to work 6 or 7 more years, right? He wants to retire, be healthy on his own terms. That wasn't going to happen for him, right? But now it is. So what I'm saying is like that. So you can imagine how ex and I hate to talk about it this way, but how expensive is a cardiac arrest in your health insurance plan? How expensive is a line of duty death and a line of duty death funeral? And what other ripple could have happened in this gentleman's circumstances? And so instead, at the expense of about $1,750, right? He had his scan on a Monday and he was in the cath lab on a Thursday. He missed two tours of work, right? He missed 96 hours of work. That's it. He didn't have to go to cardiac rehab, right? All the things that go with a cardiac event. And so I don't remember our exact numbers, but we're at about 10 or 12 stents today in our member population that don't have chest pain, that weren't out actively seeking healthcare, right, for these events. And our goal at the end of 2026, we'll probably get done before that, is to have our entire line population scan. And then from there, we can take, and that's a really big end in the fire industry, right? From a research perspective. You look at a lot of our research and it's small numbers. We're hopeful that, we're going to have 620, 640 firefighters. So we'll have this data pool that we think, and then we can come back to governance, to board of directors, and tell this really good story of, man, this ounce of prevention saved us millions of dollars in healthcare. It probably saved some lives. Save some families. So the opportunity, but it goes back to what I want to go back to. The most important thing is that men and women in our populations that have their own experiences can bring it back to us too, right? So if these two gentlemen didn't bring back this new technology to us and start to ask the questions, is maybe this is a better tool of screening than what we were doing, it wouldn't have ever happened, right? We'd have waited. We'd have just been watching. Someone else would have brought it forward, but. But it was, and we're that kind of, right? Like we right now today, I know the political our income environment in Colorado is changing, right? We all know that's happening to us right now. We're all struggling with budget and what those forecasts in 26 and 27 look like. But right now we're a well-funded jurisdiction. And I think that's another, and because I know there's those men and women in out there listening, is that if the time is right and you have the funding and you have the ability, and we believe in that altruistic nature, lifting the seas together, right? Is that if we have the opportunity to do it and it lifts the whole industry, then we should be doing it, right? And that's really what I believe in this program. This program may change cardiac screening for the fire service, right? Forever. And if we can do better for all of us, if we can prevent that cardiac arrest on the fire ground or that cardiac arrest 2 years after retirement, like what a gift to the industry, right?
Yeah, an amazing gift. And then we're actually doing something about the, not including cancer, the 50% line of duty deaths of sudden cardiac arrest. Like we can actually impact that number, which hasn't changed since the 1970s. You know,
Yes.
we can actually do something about it using technology and just a little bit of cash that, again, if you save somebody's life, he's only gone for 96 hours and it costs $1,700, you saved a lot of money overall. If he was
This
off for 6 or 8 months.
program in total to get that whole population through, like I said, in 3 years is a $900,000 program. And so again, that's not pay, I get it, but like we talked about before, maybe you postpone an engine for a couple of years, right? Maybe you limp a reserve engine a little bit longer before you buy that new $1 million engine, right? To fund a program like this. And that's really, there's other ways, right, to find some of the money, and you're putting it right back into the men and women that serve. And like I said, and then when you talk to cardiologists around this program, is what's lurking, right? Why are our disease rates higher? Like, it's all the things you and I talk about. Are they stress? Is it cortisol? Is it sleep deprivation? Is it exposure to toxins? Like, what is it that's driving our rates of disease a little bit higher than the general pop, right? And the cool part is now this cardiology group is as curious as we are, right? Now they're like, why? Because they're anecdotally, this is anecdotal today, but anecdotally they feel like our rates are higher because they treat the general population every day. So what's lurking, right? I think that's another idea, like what's lurking out there that we don't know about yet.
Yeah, some things I'm thinking about is it's really interesting to hear, we're very lucky in the state of Colorado where we have a relatively healthy population of general population and certainly a healthy population of firefighters compared to other regions of the country. And I can say that just with my own experience from teaching across the country and seeing what the baseline level is, or the conversations that you and I have had with other fire departments where the things that they're trying to deal with and maybe how many METs they're trying to even get past. That is not typically what like South Metro specifically is dealing with. And so for me to hear you say, hey, we have a higher cardiac plaque buildup and risk than the general population, that actually really, really surprised me. Okay, well, that just is what it is, right? Yes, it's not a peer-reviewed study yet,
Right, right,
but
right,
we
right.
can, we, you know, how many Oreos do you have to dip in the milk before you know that one of them is going to get soggy? Do you have to do the whole bag
Yeah.
or can you figure it out after one, right?
Yeah.
And so, okay, that's what our lived reality is today, is we have a higher rate of cardiac plaque buildup and things like that. Here's a technology that can help us solve that. And then we can start to get upstream of that. So talking to the cardiologists, like, why do you guys think, right? And you listed them all out. And then we can start to ebb and flow and pick those little ones off as appropriate. And so I think it's important too, when Christian says that that's a $900,000 cost, well, South Metro is a big fire department. I mean, how many uniform personnel do you have roughly? 800 or so?
Yeah, we're around 830 stations, 300 square miles. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a big department, right? So
Yeah.
don't hear
Yeah. No,
900
that's,
grand
yeah.
and like your head pop off. Your department, it might be 5 grand for that sort of thing. Or if you take, hey, based on numbers and studies and things like that, this is the most vulnerable population. Let's start with them. And
Absolutely.
so, which is exactly what you all did. And again, yeah, if
You,
you're saving, you save one person's life, it was worth every penny. Even if you save one person's life and it cost your department $900,000, that was worth every single penny of that.
Other departments are going to start doing this, right? I think we were out at the Metro Fire Chiefs Conference in Tulsa, speaking to, those other 320 fire chiefs, and a lot of interest and curiosity. I think you've got Tiffany Lipsey up there at CSU, putting her foot in the pool as well, looking at this with some partners. I think that we'll see some growth, and we'll really probably see some good data from different places, right? That then we'll know, right? Is the story true or not? And yeah, I think it's exciting.
Yeah, it's really great stuff. So as we wrap up, just give us a general overview. Of course, just like a lot of these podcasts, I have all these bullet points and we talked about none of them, which is perfect. That's great. I love how
Okay,
this thing
sorry.
ebbed and flowed.
Sorry.
No,
Yeah, right.
that was great. This is exactly what we were after for sure. And I think the audience really will appreciate it. These are the conversations and the questions that I get quite a bit. But what does the general framework of your program look like now? And remember, this all started with Christian, who likes to hurt himself. He mentioned tearing his ACL and tearing his Achilles tendon. So maybe no more parkour, Christian, right? But
Yeah, no more
it
parkour.
all started with
Right.
him on a light duty project, and then it's grown to this. So this isn't just, oh, they have more money than God.
Right.
I hear that a lot about South Metro. They have more money than God. It's like, no, they've just slowly grown this thing and then gotten grants and save the department money and blah, 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 blah. So what does the program look like now?
Yeah, so today we've grown, so I can tell, and we've grown into now two, the tree that's now starting to branch, right? So we started, like, again, we focused on physical health, right? So we started with physical health, workers' compensation, re returning from injury, so on and so forth. Then we started to do better, augmenting our annual income of physicals. So today we have a team of three strength and conditioning coaches. They work out of our training center. They run our academy PT. They do some outreach with the station, and they help do they do work hardening. And then we have two athletic trainers and two physical therapists that do our in our rehab program. We have a full-time physician. We started with like a vendor physician relationship, 8 hours a week, and a full-time PA, and that model really wasn't working very well. And so we rebranded that under one full-time physician. This year, we've had a grant-funded PA to help assist us with this cardiac pilot program, because that's a big lift while we're also doing annual physicals. We have a clinic administrator in the basement. I'm sorry, our clinic's in the basement. So sorry, I know people don't know that. So in that team, and so that was our wellness program. The intent was that everything was running together. But one of the things that, it's an inherent risk of hiring men and women from outside the organization is they're going to become singularly focused on their modality, which is appropriate, right? That's what they're trained to do. And so we were losing some traction on our behavioral health, substance misuse, and those other programs. And so we've branched into wellness, which is now at South Metro is our physical health program. And then we've branched the second branch now off that tree is behavioral health and well-being. And so that's all those other modalities, right? So it's behavioral health, substance misuse, transition services, mentorship, and all of those other things, right? That really, that's where my heart really lies. Like I said at the beginning, it feels like the physical health is a little bit more elementary and established, and this is that other space, right? Prevention, resilience, grit, and so I now lead that behavioral health and well-being bureau. We also house a robust modified duty program, which I think it's overlooked and not thought about a lot. We spend a lot of time developing our modified duty program. Our men, we have a health and well-being manager that manages the modified duty program. She warehouses all of the projects from the organization. She tries to pair firefighters with the program. We try to like I learned on the job. I had to learn how to use Excel in a modified duty assignment. So what we do now is when you come in on modified duty, we assign you the Microsoft Office suite. So you get to learn all the products, right? And then we try to pair you. So we're trying to do some professional development while you're in modified duty. We want modified duty to fill FTE hours, right? Like we want it to be more thoughtful, and we want it to be a win-win. And we also, the other thing I'll do, I wanted to share this too quickly, because I think that modified duty gets overlooked so often in our organizations, is like we hide them, we forget about them. We want them engaged. We want to see them every day. We want them to have community. We have them housed together in the same location in the building. They have a kitchen table. I bought a coffee pot that looks just like the station. bun machine, right? We did all the things. And that's their table. It's labeled Station 50. All of these things, so they have some community when they're here. And but the other priority is that we tell all of the other bureaus in the organization that might have a modified duty firefighter that they get 4 hours a day out of that firefighter. They don't get eight, right? Because the other 4 hours is for them. It's their physical rehab. They're down in the basement doing rehab. They're doing some professional development. They're keeping up on their target solutions, right? And they're going to get 4 hours of work. So changing that big paradigm shift of like, hey, when you're on mod duty, you're mine for 8 hours. We've done a really good job of that. The men and women are the priority. Getting them back to work and whole, and keeping them whole while they're injured is a priority. So that's the again, that's an overview summary of the program today. But we do, like I said, all the strength and conditioning, occupational medicine, workers' compensation, the Behavioral Health Administration, and all those soft skills that we were talking about too, we try to encompass in these two programs.
It's amazing. Super encouraging, like very exciting. I'm fired up now. I'm super excited, and I know that the listenership will be as well. How can people reach out to you since you're not busy enough if you want them to? How can people ask you questions along the way?
Oh yeah, I'm on LinkedIn at least once a week. So you can find, just by name, Christian Macklin on LinkedIn, or you can reach me at South Metro at chris.macklin@southmetro.org.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for the time. Thank you for the energy, and the resilience overall for the people in your organization. I know that none of us really want to come offline, but sometimes it's important for us to do it. And man, you all are certainly the leader in the fire service right now in this space. So it's awesome, and I'm excited to learn more from you along the way. So really appreciate all your effort and energy.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate the conversation.
It's a fun time. So thanks for tuning into the Firefighter Craftsmanship Podcast. Please don't forget to rate, review, and share the show. I think that this one's probably going to get shared quite a bit. And you can always hit us up at firefightercraftsmanship.com or on the social media platforms with Instagram, LinkedIn, Kevin Housley, or on Facebook. And stay smart.